So I have the talk from yesterday already. Mm-hmm. So I want to expand on some of those topics.
Yeah.
So one thing you were talking about was kind of theatrical activism versus practical activism and intellectual change versus the people in the streets with the signs mm-hmm. and the sort of feel good, I think it's more of a leftist mentality. Like they're running around Washington, D.C., right next to the buildings they ought to be entering in and talking to people, and instead they're playing drums in the park. Why are demonstrations such a diversion of energy and time?
To start with, factually, we can see that all those demonstrations and pickets achieved really nothing. This is very, very embarrassing. Yesterday I mentioned the demonstration against the war. You know, in London we had apparently 4 million people in the streets, and it didn't stop Blair from taking Britain to war. But there is another issue. There were 4 million people in the streets 1 week before the war, 3 months after the war embarked, when it became clear that we are killing tens of thousands of people. Nobody came to demonstrate in practically the anti-war movement basically collapsed, dwindled down.
The same in the U.S.
For sure. And what I think that it is all about, it's leftists and progressives are exercising their political power, knowing that it cannot bring a change. On the other end, we can see what happened in France in the last few weeks. A black artist, Dieudonné, for more than a while is saying, I'm black, I care about my people. Slavery, endless persecution, discrimination with no end. I don't care that much about your Holocaust, about the primacy of Jewish suffering. This guy was chased by the Jewish lobby for more than a while, both Zionist and anti-Zionist, is now subject to vile legislation by the so-called Socialist Party, and he is supported by millions of people, Arabs, Muslims, black, gypsies, or how do you call them, Roma, or travelers, or I don't know what is the politically correct term, you know, I don't like political correct terms.
Right.
True, he's not supported by any Jews. In fact, the only Jew that I think that supported him was Jacob Cohen, who is a very nice guy. He also invented a salute, the canel. Basically, you put your right hand on your chest, and you do something as such, and you know your left. Yeah, it's not a Nazi salute. It's basically anti-establishment. And surprisingly enough, the entire Jewish world decided that this anti-establishment salute is actually anti-Semitic. And why did they decide that it's anti-Semitic? Probably because Jews, politically at least, identify with them themselves with the establishment, which is pathetic, but very revealing. However, for saying, I'm black, I care about my people, he has been tagged, labeled as an anti-Semite, Holocaust denier, anti-racist, and so on and so on. But millions are now following him. And this is not because he called for a demonstration. He didn't call for a demonstration. What we see is a shift of consciousness. For many years, I argue, Palestine is here. Palestine is just one symptom of Jewish power. We see it in France. We see it in America. Now the left is practically operating as a control opposition. Instead of looking into the most important working class concern, labor, production, the idea that I wake up in the morning and have a place to work and to bring bread and butter to my family. Instead of dealing with this most crucial issue, they are actually for years pushing identity politics. They have managed to break societies all over the West into many synagogues, the synagogues of the Jews, the synagogues of the Muslim, the synagogues of the black, the synagogue of the gays, the synagogue of the transsexual. They made sure that all of us are identified as a Jew, as a black, as a gay.
As a woman.
As a woman, it's yeah. Endless. We all engaged in meaningless battles. The gays are fighting with the Muslims. The Jews are fighting. And we basically, without realizing it, let globalization take place. We lost our workplace, our livelihood is ruined. And it comes, and all those pickets are just achieved nothing. And then we see that in France, one man, one single man, can bring change about. And this is why I'm very inspired by the idea of change of consciousness. Now, the left are very horrified by this body salute. For a good reason, there is something quite unique about people coming collectively with a physical gesture. But physical gesture is very revealing. For instance, if you are with your partner in bed and it becomes clear that you are erected, it's a clear sign for her that we may encounter a sexual intercourse. The same applies to the canal. It's a body gesture. It's a clear sign to the Jewish lobby, to the left, we are tired of your tricks. And this is why Dieudonné is in the center of attention at the moment.
It's the power of art too, and you see that from everything from pro wrestling to Hitler, where utilizing a symbol or, you know, the banners or salutes or whatever.
By the way, the left and the progressive, they love symbolism. Let's not, you know, they like the. For a while they liked the red flag and then the Palestinian scarves and we are the 99. But all those symbols are actually covering for impotence, for dysfunctionality. when you call yourself an activist, what you really do, you cover the fact that you are engaged in a major paralyzed project. The 99%, I mentioned it yesterday, they call themselves the 99%, the occupation movement. If they are the 99%, and I was very inspired by this movement in the very early, in its early stages. If they are 99%, how is it possible they didn't even manage to pull 1% to the streets? It's a lie.
What's also very telling when you see a kind of catchphrase grow so fast, just like Kony 2012 or Free Tibet in 2008, which has been an issue forever. Both of them have, actually. And then suddenly everyone's talking about it. And these are Soros-funded, you know, pet projects. And you get a lot of mindless sloganeering. There's a difference between having a slogan, an anti-establishment thing, and then having a slogan that no one even really understands. It's just,
you,
I want to be part of an in-group, and so I'm going to have fun yelling in the park or something.
Absolutely. You mentioned the name. You mentioned Soros. The fact that 99% of American left and progressive campaigns are funded by a leading hedge fund organization or person who also funds the Zionist J Street is more than revealing. We see a controlled opposition, and I actually argue that even the solidarity with Palestine, and this is something to understand for more than a while, is a spin. It's a very, very vicious spin. When I was in Ann Arbor last year, I talked to a group of Palestinian solidarity and Palestinians, and they wanted me to deal with Israel and Israeli oppression, which I'm always happy to do. But I asked them, you know, 30 miles from here, you have Detroit. Mm-hmm. A shanty town. Disgrace. Why do you care about Palestine? Why don't you care about your neighbor?
There.
All those progressive Jews in New York, Mondo Wise and co, where were they when their Hispanic or black neighbors were kicked out of the neighborhood and pushed into segregated areas? Palestine has become a solidarity pet that is there to divert our attention from the real issue. This is how contemporary left is dealing with the most troubling issues. It's
set to fail too, because they'll talk about, even the anti-Zionists will talk about, say, ending the occupation or something. Yeah. But not get at the root of it,
and
the Jewish racism,
right,
which has caused
right.
the whole thing to begin with.
You are right. And another thing, if the left start to think about things that are local, they would address Native Americans. Mm-hmm. Now, it's an important issue.
Detroit, too, they have houses for $5.
Yeah.
And nobody wants to be, you know.
Yeah, for sure. You know, you said, I'm ex-Jew, now I hear $5 house, I must buy something.
It's in Detroit, though. But they have the highest property tax in the nation.
Yeah.
I mean, they've just been dismantled from within on the politics there, but they're going to give a $30 billion bailout to GM, which used to be based in Detroit, and they just turned around and used it to ship jobs overseas. But Detroit's $3 billion in debt, so they couldn't find money for an entire city full of people, mm-hmm. but they found 10 times as much for a specific company
yeah.
who ends up outsourcing. And
yeah, as you probably know.
And, but
I'm
again,
not,
like
I'm
with labor, that's
in...
fine though, but I'm into that.
Yeah.
And they, as you said earlier, they're not talking about labor and work and what ought to be the core issue and used to be
yeah.
on the left.
Listen,
and instead, they just want to talk about
economy is not my issue, but... For instance, bailing out a company that is supposed to produce production is maybe a cleverer way to deal with such an issue, but you have to make sure that the company is spending it locally. Mm-hmm. But in a global era, the money can go out, you know? So you have to be very, very, very clever, you know?
And they didn't lose money on labor costs and things. They got it speculating houses and stuff.
If it would be down to me, if I would have to decide, and it's it is probably more than a while before I decide to run a country. I don't expect to be elected for it, but this is not the issue. I would prefer to give money to put money on production rather than to spend it on politicians. Mm-hmm. You know, this is my approach. But there must be a lot of legislation and caveat that guarantees that this money stays where it should be.
It's called an earmark, but they didn't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid of that. But I wanted to ask you too, you talked about the pet cause, the kind of fashionable sale where for Palestinian solidarity while our own cities are in just falling apart. And even in Palestine, they don't have a real, any kind of genuine solution or anything. It's just kind of fun to pitch about it, but they never get to the source of it. And I wanted
they cannot get, again, this is something that I dealt with extensively. We cannot get to the source of the problem, to the root cause of the problem in Palestine, because in order to do that, we would have to address the very troubling topic, i.e. the Jewish question. We have to open the Jewish question. Israel defined itself as the Jewish state. It is supported all over the world by very aggressive Jewish lobbies. And actually the left is there to stop us from discussing the Jewishness is Israel, of Israel, and the activity of the Jewish lobbies. I, for more than a while, define Jewish power as the capacity to stop us talking about Jewish power. And the left, the progressive, and the Jewish left in particular, are the main vehicle in maintaining Jewish power.
Yeah, it's a strange phenomenon, and that's what I was going to ask, is about the left's sort of blindness to the racism of Jews, and indeed Israel's state-ordained racism, which you can also incorporate a kind of God that's both a racial purist and a real estate agent. But I think it's part of their idea that minorities can't be racist.
And do you say it in reference to Jews? Yeah, you obviously.
because I think it would be clear if it wasn't Jewish, and the same thing was happening, it would clearly be racism, like with South Africa or something. Like if whites are doing that to blacks, everyone notices that. But if Jews do it to Palestinians or somebody else, they can get away with it.
I think that every adult in the West do realize by now the Jewish identity is, at least politically, racially driven. You don't need the Gilad Atzmon for that. What people do not realize, that it is actually the Jewish lobby within the left that push for identity politics. Now, this is a very, very big question. Our parents' generation still thought in biological and Darwinist terms. I could hear older people when I was young, they said, oh man, what do you expect from this person? He's an Arab. What do you expect, you know, obviously he's black. He's into money, he's a Jew. They connected between characteristics and race or ethnicity and so on and so on. I believe that at least in the multicultural societies, we definitely see discrimination. We definitely see cultural intolerance, but it is not racially driven. So, for instance, Islamophobia is not racially driven. Muslims are not a race. The opposition to Jewish politics is not racially driven. It's mainly political. Discrimination of black people, in most cases, I think, is severe form of cultural intolerance. Now, if I'm correct here...
It's usually at a subculture.
Exactly. If I'm correct here, what we see is that the left maintain their racist thinking. The left maintain racial and biological driven ideology, because this is the only thing that keeps the left relevant. So the left is leading the racist politics and racist discourse. And this is very, very devastating. And again, I'm reading now extensively the work of George Orwell. I think that he is the last poetic, lefty intellectual. And by the way, it's very different from our contemporary idiots who, for some reason, still call themselves leftists. He was a socialist, but he was a patriot. And he was also an essentialist. But he thought primarily about working class. Leftists, contemporary leftists, don't even understand what is working class, because we are dealing really with a workless class. Under their guard, we were robbed of production. So all they do is pushing more and more people into ghettos. Yesterday, we had in the talk around 4, 5, 6 black people. I think that all of them were Americans. Apparently, they all read my book. And when I started, it was very, you know, I don't know them, I never met them before, but when I started to talk about the left pushing us to identify, to talk as a Jew, as a Muslim, as a gay, as black, they said yes. They were very excited because they understood that the left set them into a trap where they marginalized themselves and push themselves into ghettos. And this is the real outcome of the civil rights movement, and this is devastating beyond belief. And we have to identify who is it within the left that didn't care at all about production? Who is it within the left that push identity politics? Who are they? And my study, and it's very, very embarrassing, makes it very clear that these were Jewish leftists. And it is very easy to explain. For the Jew, the idea of the nation is very, very frightening. Jews were chased by nations. We can talk about Germany, I'm taking it out of context, you know, we can talk about the reasoning, but they saw themselves chased by the Germans, they saw themselves chased by the Ukrainians and the Poles. When World War II, you know, they faced anti-Semitism in Russia. It is very clear to people who operate politically as Jews that breaking the nation into an endless fragments would make them into one minority amongst many. And miraculously, Dieudonné proved that this trick is not going to work. It's very interesting.